Good morning. We're moving from pounds and quality to people.
All right.
I'm going to talk to you about a project that we launched at Drexel University and in Philadelphia called Witnesses to Hunger. And I have no relationships to disclose. First, I'm going to talk to you about the rates of food insecurity in the United States, and I'm going to explain to you why we launched Witnesses to Hunger in Philadelphia, which explains a little bit our frustration with how slowly things are moving forward in the United States. I'm going to talk to you about our methods, where we used Photo Voice, and I'll explain to you how we're working with women in Philadelphia to inform the press and to inform policymakers, and then I'm going to show you a brief film that we've created that introduces the concept of Witnesses to Hunger, and it's about 7 minutes long. I'm not sure you define it, but I will. So I'm really sorry that if this is repetition for most of you. But food insecurity is the lack of access to enough food for an active and healthy life. And as Liz was saying, it's not just about the quantity of food, having enough food. It has a lot to do with the quality of food, making sure that there's nutritious food that allows for an active and healthy life. And when children are in food insecure households, or if it's child food insecurity, that means that children are experiencing repeated reductions in the quantity or in the quality of food, which has very negative health consequences. Back in 2007, there were about 12.5 million children living in food insecure households. And the younger the child, the more at risk a household is. So if you look at the sippy cup over to the left, it's about 17% of all households in the United States with young children, 5 years old and younger, are experiencing food insecurity. That's twice the rate of households that have no children at all. Hunger and food insecurity is not just a moral issue. It's a major public health problem. It's an urgent public health issue. Children that are in food insecure households have more health problems compared to children that are in food secure households. They're at higher risk of poor development. They have higher rates of having stomach aches, headaches, colds, and ear infections, and they have significantly higher hospitalization rates. It not only affects a child's body and their physical health, but it affects their psychosocial and behavioral health. So children that are in food insecure households have higher rates of aggression and hyperactivity and anxiety, and they also have a greater need for mental health services. And finally, children that are in food insecure households do not perform well in school. This should come as no surprise. Their scores in math and in reading are significantly lower than children that are in food secure households. Children in Philadelphia, more than 1 in 3 children lives in poverty, at the federal poverty line and below. And almost 227,000 children are living in severely deprived areas. By severely deprived areas, that means there's a major housing crisis, poor infrastructure, not great social services, and they're exposed to lots of risks in all different on all different levels. About 1 in 5 households in Philadelphia that have children are experiencing food insecurity, and that's from data from 2008. And finally, there's about 77,000 children, more than 77,000 children that are experiencing the most severe form of food insecurity. I just want to mention briefly that we also participate in Children's Health Watch, which is a multi-site study where we're empirically investigating the impact of federal nutrition programs and public assistance programs on child health and well-being, on maternal depression, and food insecurity. And these are the different sites that we're involved in. We're in Boston, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Minneapolis, and Little Rock. And we used to have sites in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. And we've been doing this research for the past 10 years, and our data set is over 35,000 children strong. And in Philadelphia, we've interviewed about 3,500 families at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children. These are the different assistance programs that we look at. We look at also at child care subsidies and other federal assistance programs. And we're investigating how all of these programs manifest in the health and well-being of children and their caregivers. Okay, so now I'm going to launch into why we started Witnesses to Hunger, which is a different form of research. This is epidemiological research, standard, doing logistic regression, et cetera, that I'm sparing you the details of. But I just want you to know that it's been this work that we've launched with Witnesses to Hunger stands on about 10 years of research. through Children's Health Watch. I would like to show you the disparities in food insecurity in the United States. If you look at all households, it's about 11% of all households in the United States back in 2007 that experienced household food insecurity. But if you look at the disparities, again, I'm showing you again that the households that have children under the age of 6 have significantly higher rates than all other households. And female-headed households have 3 times the rate of food insecurity, 3 times the prevalence. And of course, if you look at Latino and Black households, their rates are significantly higher than whites. And I want to put this line there, which indicates Healthy People 2010's goal for reducing food insecurity to 6%. This goal was set back in 2000 when these rates were pretty much the same. We are nowhere close to our goal, and we have made no headway. And I want to show you the disparities over time. You can see, you can just look at the lines from 1998 all the way up to 2007. There's been no significant change in the prevalence of food insecurity. And there's been no significant change in the disparities of food insecurity. While all of this is happening, and while we are taking our evidence from Children's Health Watch to the Hill to testify before Congress about the importance of nutrition assistance programs and of housing subsidies and of energy subsidies, trying to inform policymakers based on evidence what works for children, what can prevent food insecurity, and what can treat food insecurity and improve child health. At the same time, these disparities are not changing over time. We're no closer to our goals. The USDA decides, I'm sparing you many details because I'm trying to get to witnesses, change their terminology for how we talk about food insecurity in this country. This is straight out of the USDA. Through the Life Sciences Research Office, back in 1995 and up through 98, they were working out the terminology for how are we going to discuss hunger in America. Well, let's call it food insecurity. So there's food secure, and then up through 2005, we called it food insecure without hunger, and then food insecure with hunger. And as you can probably guess, food insecurity with hunger is the most severe form of food insecurity, and it becomes very urgent. In 2006, under the Bush administration, some scientists got together and decided that, well, maybe we shouldn't really use the term hunger because we can't really drill down to the individual level, and sometimes we talk to somebody in the household that may not be experiencing hunger, but somebody else in the household is experiencing hunger, so we don't really know. We don't have enough evidence. So maybe hunger is not the right term. So the USDA decided, well, let's change around the terminology. Food secure, and then marginally food secure, I'm not going to address that today. And food insecure stuck, because they found, well, this is actually a very good term, and we like it, and it does indicate that the household does not have enough money to ensure that people in the household are getting enough food for an active and healthy life. And look what happened to the new terminology. There was food insecure, which was now called food insecure without hunger, which was low food security. And then food insecure with hunger became very low food security, which creates a cognitive dissonance, I'm sure, just in having you all sit here, that there's something called low food security within the category of food insecurity. Somehow this was supposed to clarify. If you look at the reports, it says there's been lots of confusion over the food insecurity terminology. I'm not sure what this does to eliminate that confusion. At the same time, back in 2006, the USDA thought, well, we want to clarify this. I'm assuming that this is what they wanted to do. They created, for the first time, an audio slideshow to introduce the new terminology of food insecurity, just in case there was any confusion of those of us who read the actual report and can actually understand the terminology. Maybe they thought they would reach a broader audience. And this is Mark Nord, who is a fabulous person that's been working at the USDA for several years on maintaining the food insecurity measure in and of itself. This is the first slide. I'm going to give you the voiceover that he gave. Food security is when families have enough money for food for an active and healthy life. I think you have seen by now that this is a picture of people eating oysters, salmon, and white wine. Somehow this is supposed to truly show what food insecurity is or what food security is, clarify what the measure is all about. And this is the first slide introducing food insecurity in the United States for 2006. Okay, well, this was for me the thing that put me over the edge and made me feel like perhaps as a scientist I'm a part of the problem, because I too am tracking the rates of food insecurity in Philadelphia and around the country, and the rates are not changing. Something is very wrong here because the scientists can't communicate and the USDA is having a very difficult time making things very clear. Therefore, I launched this project called Witnesses to Hunger, and I called it Mothers Taking Action to Change Health Policy. And I'm going to show you our website pretty soon. But I figured it was time for people who know what that experience of food insecurity is like to be able to speak up, to put some clarity into the national dialogue about hunger and poverty in America. So we use a method called Photo Voice, which is was developed by Carolyn Wang and others, where there was this feeling that maybe you should hand over the frame of reference to your participants rather than to objectify them and study them in a way. So give cameras to people who would be your clients or who would be your research participants to have those people frame what the issues are. And from there, there's a whole technique where once they have taken the photographs, you say, why did you take this picture? What do you want people to see and what do you want people to do about it? We recruited them through the emergency room. I recruited them straight out of the Children's Health Watch research. You'll hear more about it later on, and we did at least two interviews. The first one was a training on how to use the camera. We gave everybody a Canon PowerShot. We used the Children's Health Watch interview to make sure that we had enough information on the different types of public assistance programs that they're participating in. And the second time around, we went back, downloaded the photographs that they took, and we did an audio recorded interview. From there, we also brought the women together into focus groups to decide on what types of themes we should be really focusing on and choose which photographs we were going to include in an exhibit. From there, we've also been doing ongoing advocacy and training workshops. I wasn't really sure if this project was going to work, and I wasn't really sure what could be captured in a photograph, but I knew it was going to be better than that photograph of the people eating oysters. I knew that. This is the first photograph from the first participant in Witnesses to Hunger. When I was very nervous about when I was going back to this woman's house, whether she would have any photographs at all, whether she understood what we were trying to achieve and to accomplish, and whether any kind of image would be created or shown from her life. This is the first photograph that she pulled up. She said, "I gave this camera to my neighbor because I wanted my neighbor to take a picture of her kitchen." Because she's living in her house with her 7-year-old and a 2-year-old. And this is her kitchen. And I want people to see that even though things look good on the outside, you never know what's going on the inside. And things get so bad. They get so bad that we're afraid to ask for help. And then she said, living in a situation like this, you can see how the children can go hungry. She cooked, at the time that she was living in this house, this woman has since then become a participant in the Witnesses to Hunger program. Because she was eligible, she had a young child under the age of 3. And we also did a snowball technique that after we recruited through the emergency room, word of mouth spread pretty much like wildfire on the buses and subways, and we got calls from all over the place. So I know what's been happening in this woman's life, and she used to be able to cook on a hot plate. Living without running water, I had to go across the street to use the bathroom and bathe her children. Her children had to go across the street as well. Interestingly, the stove is used to heat her home when the gas is on. And interestingly, in the Children's Health Watch interview, this woman would come out as housing secure because she owns her home and has not moved. She would come out as energy insecure, though. This is another photograph from the same participant, from Barbie, and I just put this in there because we were talking about water this year at APHA. She took a picture of this man who came out with a kettle, and in this old kettle, you can see it's pretty old, from 1930s or something, had soap in there. He was bathing at the fire hydrant in the summertime. She went up to him afterwards, after she took the photograph, and she said, "Why are you bathing at the fire hydrant?" And he said, "I was so happy to see running water because I'm living without running water." So I say to Barbie, "Why did you take this picture? What do you want people to do?" She said, "How can the city let this happen? How can the city let people live without running water?" And we know that Barbie has often had episodes where she too has been living without running water, not paying the water bill, things not going very well. So things were not all dire. There are a lot of beautiful photographs of, here's a beautiful photograph of peaches. To have more peaches in our neighborhood. This was a truck that drove in and was selling peaches off the back of the truck and corn. But it was pretty haphazard. But these are the different issues that the women raise. Things having to do with their children, total celebration of motherhood and the future of their children. A lot of discussion over neighbors and neighborhood. One of the most important issues was housing and homelessness, experiences with homelessness. Of course, food and hunger, childcare, and then isolation, pain and depression, and violence. So as you can imagine, you're only going to get a taste of what's been going on in Witnesses because it's very multidimensional. This is launched straight. Our framework is really based in the human rights approach to food and to food security. And the three things that we tend to focus on with the human rights approach is to draw attention to discrimination, to increase participation by the people who are most affected by policies, and to ensure accountability. And so how are we increasing the participation of women through the use of the photographs and through their voices? We have an exhibit that's a traveling exhibit that launched last December in Philadelphia and has traveled down to the Senate, to the Russell Rotunda building, at the Russell building, hosted by Senator Casey. We have a website that's searchable by issue, policy, and by woman and child. We have a blog, we have a YouTube channel, and we're also on Twitter and Facebook. Because the whole point, again, is to increase participation and to change the dialogue, to strengthen and deepen the dialogue about hunger and poverty. So here's an example up in the left-hand corner. That was right before our exhibit opened, but you can see we have our photographs up on professionally, they're professionally framed. It's a professional exhibit. On the right-hand side, you can see some people watching a video. We have a video booth that's a portable video booth that has three very intimate videos about anger, violence, and rape, and also sort of a flighty little video about children and Imagine and things like that. This is Estelle Richmond, the Secretary of Welfare, whom we invited to the exhibit to say a few words so that she could actually see firsthand the photographs and meet some of the women. And there on the lower right-hand corner, that's Whitney, who was supposed to be here today. There's Imani and there's Erica Smalley. And Erica and Imani are here today to talk to you about their participation in this project. This is the first page of our website, which I'd invite you to go look at and explore. It's a work in progress. I had no idea the magnitude of the work that it would take, and I have practically zero expertise in editing video and audio files, but we're learning. And there we are meeting with Jim McGovern, the chair of the Hunger Caucus of the House of Representatives. And that's Senator Casey meeting with Angela Sutton and two other witnesses. There's Barbie on the left-hand corner. She's the woman who took the photograph of the kitchen. We're also directly informing the press. We've been featured in The Inquirer, WHYY, CNN, Washington Post, The Inquirer, and CBS News. My movie is 7 minutes long. I could stop there, or we could do that terrible thing of going over time. I'm really sorry.
It's pretty obvious you piqued the audience's interest here.
Can I show you the movie?
I would proceed.
All right. I talked too much, as usual. The whole point is for me to get out of the way. Oh, okay. Show the movie. Thank you.
advice. You know, I just want them to get the point. There's 40 women, that's 40 different characteristics that we all share.
We're all different people, different situations, some of us need different help than others. We all are pretty much at work to do something to better ourselves if we're not just the ones that sit at home collecting food samples and not doing anything with it.
We're individual, but we pretty much the same woman. Yeah. Same
person. I think we're all individual, but we're one voice for everybody.
That's right. My son is going to be better than me in the sense that he's going to have a better foundation. And, you know, I want to lay out, I mean, I had good opportunities compared to the previous generation. You know, you always want to make sure the next generation is better, better, better. So my goal is to make sure that he doesn't have to deal with that.
We're equals. That's what I want them to see. I want them to know that the same children go through, pay your mortgage, and the same way you have to work a 40-hour week, and you have to cook dinner, and you have to get by. So I'm no different because I'm a woman. We're equal. No labels.
Are you aware of my hunger, of my struggle, and my pain that I experienced as an adult and as a child? I've lived in foster homes and group homes with girls who have had harder lives than me. They say you have to pick your battles. Well, this isn't a battle of choice. This is my life and this is my voice.
You know, with the money, the food stamps that they provide, you know, I was able to feed her breakfast that morning. You know, without it, what would she have eaten? Now, I don't like to flip everything always on the bad side. I just wanted to show, you know, with the help, she was able to eat breakfast that morning. She had cereal, she had milk. She didn't have to go without.
Come leave your world just for 1 week and live in my world. And tell me how you're going to make it and survive, and just how emotionally you're going to keep yourself together to day by day look at your kids and tell them, I don't have any money to take you to the store.
I don't have nothing to eat today.
Or the week, who's new today?
Now that the baby is one, she got on formula anymore, so she's eating regular food too. So it's kind of hard to eat and that's free off of what I make. Phone is insurance. The electric, gas, but I'm still trying to get down from the winter time. Besides the water isn't so bad. Besides the copay for the daycare.
She's been so sick. Those are all her medications. Her asthma started acting up, and then she got some cold sores, and forget it. But once she takes 4 or 5 times a day, just to keep her mouth from hurting so bad.
When one child is sick, that means somebody has to stay home and take care of a child that's not sick. So that means that every time he got better, and he got sick again, their dad had to take off of work. That means that's money for this. That means that's, if he's okay, so do we pay the rent?
The depression and the sadness, I think, really just comes from, like, my hardship and how hard it's been. And I know you make your own bed and you have to lie in it, but like I said, everybody has a past, whether it be good or not. But when you're trying to do positive things and move forward and make things better, it's discouraging and it's hard, and that's depressing. It makes you sad. It makes you tired. It makes you want to give up. It makes you wonder why, like, what's the point?
Discouraging, what's going to encourage you not to build trash on the ground? don't get to do a lot. They're always confined in this house, and I feel really bad. The only one that gets to enjoy outside of these doors, these walls, is Sadie. But they're always in this house, and I don't take them places because things are not safe anymore.
There's graffiti all everywhere. It's like wallpaper. It's no color.
See, downstairs, he passed. This is where he died, right here. This is a couple feet from the school. It's not safe, but it's cool. Blaine is not a safe school. It's not safe for our children.
I get to the 61 stop,
and it's puddles. I was like, I'm like, this person owns a lot of blood.
They trying to send a message, ain't nobody getting it. This is right up the bottom.
Thank you.